You're listening to a curated podcast from the Beyond Infinity radio program, broadcast live on Tuesdays from 11 a.m. from our Mornington studios in Victoria, Australia. Presented by me, Piers Cunningham.
And me, John Young.
So we have Dr. Ian Storey, who's a lecturer in information systems at RMIT, in the studio. Great to have you here, Ian.
Just to talk briefly about WannaCry. I know you talked about it before. Every semester I have a class where the students present on particular attacks that have occurred.
Right.
One group, a really good group of students, presented on WannaCry. Mm-hmm. Now, as you know, WannaCry actually had a huge effect in crippling some organizations, ones which couldn't afford to go offline to even do backup because backup was too complicated. Mm-hmm. The students' natural suggestion of a solution for WannaCry is backup. But even backup can be complicated. So if you have backup with the cloud only, which is what most of the students have, in fact, I have trouble with conveying issues of information security because students just say, oh, we'll put that in the cloud and forget about it. Well, you can't do that. Even big organizations like Amazon and Google have been attacked. And it doesn't take much to back up your own data, or at least the critical data, you know, programs you can get here and there, blah. But the stuff that only you have that you want to keep, you should be backing it up. So the students were saying, oh, that's okay. I have a USB stick, which I take from here to another computer, right? Or I've got a backup hard drive attached to the computer. But even those backup hard drives can be scanned by attackers.
Because they're connected to the original target computer.
They're connected to the target computer. And these botnets that get on your machine have control of your machine and are quite sophisticated. It doesn't take much to load a 64K program. You wouldn't even notice a download. And it can do anything. It's got immense complexity and, well, immense subtlety. So it can email people, it can look at what kind of computer you've got, what kind of protocols are there, programs, and it can even look through your hard drives. So if it wanted to, WannaCry didn't go to this level, and it could be hived off, what do they call them, waterholed. It wasn't all that subtle, but there are subtle ones coming. And I think my students are wrong. I think you've got to go even more paranoid.
You get to back up your backup.
Yeah, well, have backup that's offline. But even go
old
school. A
true air gap between the system, so it's not connected anyway. You take that and move it to a completely separate machine.
But isn't the concern, and John Young's just joined the conversation in case anyone was wondering, and we're also talking to Dr. Ian Storey, lecturer in information systems at RMIT in Melbourne. Isn't the problem regarding backup that to backup you've still got to connect physically, usually with a cable, to connect,
yes.
Yeah, so at that point of connection, you're vulnerable to transferring the infection from your main computer over to your hard drive. That's the problem.
Yeah, so I even go further and go real old school.
Remove from the internet, actually unplug it.
No, do you remember things called CDs?
Oh, yes.
Back it up to a CD.
Back up to a CD,
Because you can't load a program onto it. Well, you can't load an active program onto it.
You can save them so that that they can't be read or changed, But even if you don't, you can see the thing working. You can hear it working. And you can take it out and then keep one for each week, you know, and a grandfather one for each year or 6 months or whatever.
Yeah.
Admittedly, I'm a bit slack. No, I'm not slack. I'm not telling the world that I'm a bit slack. but I do this kind of backup.
Yep.
And the students shake their head and look at me like I'm too old school. I really don't trust anything that's connected.
Have you lost any major data in your time through this kind of thing, through ransomware or malware?
No.
So you've been pretty cautious. So obviously,
I have had friends who have, very close friends. One guy at work even, who's very tech savvy, he got attacked by ransomware, got in trouble with the info security guys at RMIT.
Because RMIT would be a place that would be just being bombarded with attempts to get in there because of all the IP and stuff that's...
Have a guess how many attacks, and this comes from the head of information security, nice bloke, Tony Aramza, really fantastic, amazing guy. How many attacks would occur at RMIT per day?
1,000 a day?
Oh, more than that. It'd have to be in the maybe in the millions.
Not in the millions, but 70,000.
Right, okay.
Wow, yeah. Per day.
Per day.
So there's obviously some goodies that people want to get out of RMIT.
Well, they're just, some of them are low level, but some of them are more sophisticated. A lot of them are phishing attacks, which is what wannabe, which is how it gets in. So you guys have described phishing attacks,
I guess. Because I was reading about the Ukraine, and there's this big political argy-bargy, you know, between the Russians and the Americans and NATO about control of Ukraine. And apparently they've had multiple cyber attacks, very sophisticated. One suggestion is that Russia is using Ukraine as a kind of a training ground where, because there's already a dispute in, it doesn't annoy people as much because they accept that there's a war going on anyway. So the fact that there's cyber warfare on a very high level going on, for example, shutting down power grids a couple of years ago, right around Christmas time when everyone's relying on heating because it's very cold in Ukraine at that time of year. I watched a YouTube video of a guy with his phone. He's filming one of the control screens in the power plant. And you could see a mouse, and they showed that he filmed the mouse as well. You could see no one's touching the mouse. There's a mouse moving over the sort of schematic of the power grid, going to these little nodes, which are sort of just, and clicking on them and shutting down, blacking out whole areas.
Yes,
and they're saying that it was like, for the hackers, it must have been like playing God, being able to literally shut down the power and heating to millions of people in Kiev and other parts of the Ukraine. This is very real. What they did was they not only got in there and ran amok and turned things off that shouldn't have been turned off, but they also had the capability, once they'd done all that damage, to actually, I think it was called Kill Disk, is a malware program that was tied up with this attack. The end of it was to zero out not just the hard drive, but the part of the hard drive that actually controls and points to the operating system itself. So they could
boot sector.
Yeah, they could zero that out. And really do a lot of damage, you know, very, very expensive to fix and big headache.
You made a comment before about a colleague of yours that's in tech savvy and they, you know, they got caught up in this ransomware. I do find it interesting that there are, I mean, there's the section of the community that use computers, phones, smartphones every day that have a certain amount of ignorance to what happens behind the scenes in terms of security. Then there's the tech community who think, oh, it's all right, I know what I'm doing, I've got it under control, and they don't sort of take the best practices. So you only have really maybe a small proportion of people that are actually taking sort of the serious steps, the serious measures to protect themselves and their data and encryption and all of that. So do you think it needs to happen more at a sort of commercial level in terms of trying to protect data? We're hearing the news at the moment where the Australian government are trying to ease the encryption method so that they can break into that. If we do go down that path, then all of a sudden the data that we're sharing between each other is less secure, and then the people that are, let's say, somewhat ignorant in terms of security measures, they're even less secure. So does it need to happen at a high level, and what could we actually do at that point?
The answer to that is kind of yes and no. There's lots of things you can do to help a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do them one behind each other, it's called defense in depth. And that can really help. Okay, so for example, have a good secure password and have a method of being able to look them up compared to a dictionary password or even just a short password. That's going to help you, what? Not very much. But if the hacker doesn't have the tools for getting that, you've stopped them. The hacker will be able to get other people and might be happy with that. Okay? So there's lots of little things like that. Two-factor login.
Mm. I'm a huge, huge fan of that. Yeah,
except when you go overseas, which I did.
And you hadn't set it up for those countries.
I hadn't set it up for that country.
Yeah.
And I changed my SIM card.
Then you can't get your mail.
I can't get my mail. Luckily, I had another device, but I quickly learned the lesson from that. But what a great idea. You guys use it, right?
They do, every day.
It only interrupts you, what, once a month? And for that, you get so much more security in depth.
Well, every time I log into Gmail, which incidentally, we're going to talk about it, but they've they've stopped putting ads. They're not going to be scanning your Gmail messages, email messages for the ads to put in literally next to your message. They've got other ways. They'll still advertise to you, but they'll get it from your YouTube and things like that, other things that you use. Every time I log into Gmail, I get a text message sent to my mobile phone with a six-digit number, and I have to put that in after my 10 random upper and lowercase numbers and letters to be able to get into my mail.
Yeah.
You can't get in unless you've got my phone.
Like I say, defense in depth. Every little extra step reduces, if it only reduces 1/10, after three steps it's 1/1000th of the chance that you're going to get trapped by a hacker if they're independent kind of attacks. So other things would be the kind of backup to CD, right? Old school. Maybe Blu-ray, less old school, but whatever. These things all add up. I'm a quote-unquote security expert. I should be. I've been teaching it for more than 10 years. I know some of the hardware side and some of the business side of what's involved in information security. Could I have a Trojan on my machine at home? Yes, right? Unless I go through and look at all of the processes that are running, and I haven't gone to that level of detail. I just hope that the little things that I do stop me from being attacked. And if they attack my bank account, then there's a lot bigger fish out there for, anyway. Right?
Sure.
You can do a lot of little things, but can you be sure that you're not going to ever be attacked? No, you can't. You can never do that. And I tell my students that if they present to me an assignment where they promise 100% security, they get zero marks for it. Because it's not, it's just not possible. So you can really, really super increase your security, but you can't absolutely secure it.
Do you do exercises with your students where you'll deliberately infect a machine and then say to them, debug this machine or find out, has it been infected? Is there anything wrong with this machine?
We have similar exercises. So I have students sort of working from both ends. The technical end, the risk analysis end, but they're not in computer science. We will get them to set up viruses and to understand how they're used and to, there's a program called Kali Linux which has a whole set of viruses on it which you can set up inside a virtual machine on a laptop, and it's great. Have you guys?
Oh, I've seen some YouTube clips, but I haven't done it myself yet.
Okay. It's really great to download. I'll send you my notes. It's a really good tool to play with to learn about the hands-on part of hacking. So I'll get the students to play with that. And they end up doing things like turning on, in the little lab we've got set up, they'll turn on the camera on somebody else's machine and take snapshots of them at a particular time when people know this is happening. They'll demonstrate hacking into phones using Wi-Fi, hacking into Wi-Fi routers. Some of them are still can be hacked into. You know, all these wonderful keyloggers. So, you know, when you type in your password, they can log the keys and then get online and get it to email you the keys that you've been pressing for the day. Scary stuff.
Have you got a bit of gaffer tape over the camera on your laptop?
I don't actually.
Because there's a good Kickstarter thing that's happening right now, and it's this small, flat, little sort of slide screen, and it just basically on any laptop you can stick it over the camera,
and just slide,
and then you just slide the window open or closed. So it's only a few dollars.
There was some footage of Mark Zuckerberg taken about 6 months or so ago. I think I told you about it at the time, the head of Facebook, and he was at a conference or something, and he had some gaffer tape over, not only over the forward-facing camera on his laptop, but also over the microphones on the side of it, I think, or wherever the microphones were. So he was concerned about it.
If I was Zuckerberg, yeah, I would be.
You're a prime target.
Yeah.
We're out of time. Thank you very much to Dr. Ian Storey, lecturer in information systems at RMIT in Melbourne, for coming in. We'll hope to get you back. We've just sort of scratched the surface of a whole bunch of areas. Another one to talk about on the subject of malware and stuff is this Vault 7 leak, of all this stuff that was developed over in America by the NSA and the CIA, and the fact that that has somehow found its way out into the wild.
It's been used, for all sorts of things, Thanks very, very much. It's been a pleasure.
No worries. Thanks.
Very, very good.
Cheers. Thanks for listening.
And head to beyondinfinity.com.au for the best bits from the live show or to connect with us on social media. We welcome your feedback and suggestion for future shows.